Well, now to Canberra, and it's been very interesting to speculate who's primarily influencing the twists and turns of the tax reform debate. Who and what are the obvious and less obvious vested interests influencing public policy that you and I inherit on a range of issues? I mean, we invariably hear what's left on the table after all the lobbying's done. Amidst the type of trading furiously underway on negative gearing right now inside the Turnbull government itself, and as you'll have heard this morning, John Howard telling the government to get on with it, relieving the tax burden on average Australians. So whose views on tax are being taken into account in Canberra? There's a long list of lobbyists, 266 at last official count, and this question of who influences government covertly is exercising democratic minds everywhere. It's a huge issue in the US especially. Some groups are unashamedly loud with their message, like the Property Council, but let's think about others. Let's catch up with the Age's economics editor, Peter Martin, to talk about tax, vested interests, community interests and the gulfs between the two. Hello, Peter.
Now, I mean, have you been sitting at Aussies watching, you know, the coffee shop, the famed coffee shop in the middle of Parliament House, watching who's coming and going? Because others have.
I think what's more important is who's dialing who these days on the mobile phone. I'll give you an example. Like, you're talking about the Property Council ad campaign, and that's there, and that's true, and I think that has dissuaded them from doing the big things that need to be done on negative gearing. But
Can we just listen? Because we've just got a little snapshot of that particular ad campaign. Just have a listen.
Property is building Australia's economy. With 1.1 million workers, it's our second biggest employer, contributing more than $180 billion to the nation every year. But if politicians play with negative gearing, all this will be at risk. It will drive investors away when we need extra housing, pushing up rent and robbing ordinary Australians of their retirement nest egg. Property is no game. Don't play with negative gearing.
Now, you think that has influenced the course of events, do you, Peter?
I do, although I don't think it's the best idea for the Property Council, because the vision, when you watch it on TV or on the internet, the vision is of a house of cards. And if I were the Property Council, I wouldn't be suggesting that about property. I think it's unfortunate. But that has affected things. And I think all they'll do on that will be to limit the most egregious examples of negative gearing. So one politician has 42 houses, not negatively geared, but 42 investment properties, many of them negatively geared, that they might limit it to six, or they might impose a 50,000 limit. But aside from that sort of obvious pressure, what you have is a Prime Minister unlike most others. I think the Prime Minister, and this is not meant to be, well, take it from it what you will, the Prime Minister most like Malcolm Turnbull is Kevin Rudd, in that Kevin Rudd, and Wayne Swan actually, during the global financial crisis, they sought advice far and wide. They rang, out of the blue, the most unlikely people who weren't lobbyists, weren't in a chain of advice. So Turnbull rang, he got him out of bed. He rang Chris Richardson from Access Economics, who suggested various things about superannuation. And spoke to him for some time and seriously tested propositions. I want to know why you're saying this. And then, you know, had other things going backwards and forwards. So I think what you have are an incredibly inquiring Prime Minister, a less inquiring but by no means uninterested Treasurer, and that's where a lot of the advice is coming. And also the Grattan Institute, these organisations were persona non grata, of course, in the previous government under Tony Abbott, but you have the right questions being asked.
What I'm intrigued by is what you think is happening under the radar. I mean, there are 266 registered lobbyists, and people like John Menadue, a former secretary of PM&C, wrote early last year that lobbying had grown dramatically in recent years in Canberra. It now represents a serious corruption of good governance and the development of sound public policy. And the former ACCC chairman, Graham Samuel, last year cautioned that a new conga line of rent seekers is lining up to take the place of those who've fallen out of favour.
I think that's describing the situation after the Abbott government came into office. So you had the financial services changes, the financial advice changes which Labor had introduced, they were very and unreasonably keen to wind
and
back.
And so were the banks, and so were the superannuation industry, and so were the casino lobby, etc.
Well, you know what they say about Donald Trump in his defence. They say he's beholden to no one. And I think once the election is out of the way, and, you know, even to some extent now, Malcolm Turnbull feels the same way. Wider sources of advice are being sought.
Now, since
the change of Prime Minister. And there's more of an emphasis on good government. You can see it in tax, right? It used to be all about efficiency, which is something that tends to, you know, happens to result in lower company taxes and so on. Now, if you look at the discussion paper that came out at the end of last year from the Treasury, it was all about that. Now, in Turnbull's rhetoric, it's all about fairness as well.
So you're saying that, in fact, you think the lobbyists aren't having the effect that they would like to or have in the past.
Yeah, not like they did.
And that if this fairness rhetoric really amounts to anything, it's making them even more sidelined.
Well, I mean, who's going to win out of what they're likely to do? They're likely to cap negative gearing, despite their talk about defending negative gearing against Labor. They're likely to cap it. They're likely to cap superannuation contributions from the very wealthy people. Now, those serve no one's interests. I mean, they serve society's interests. They serve the interests of ordinary taxpayers. But the two things that are likely to come out of this, and three things, I suppose, if you count the not going ahead with the GST increase, those things don't come from lobby groups. Now, you need strong individuals to withstand that. My observation is that the strength of the government, and not only Turnbull, the people under him now feel empowered, more empowered, to resist lobbying from interest groups.
So are the lobbyists, I mean, I suppose the central question for those of us looking on as taxpayers, is there sufficient expertise in the public service and status to be an equal and opposite force to the lobbyists?
I would think so. Like, so Treasury used to have 1,000 people. It's probably got about 700 now, right? So, you know, a lot of them have gone from the parts of the Treasury that deal with these sort of things, that deal with microeconomic advice and advice on how to deal with business. But if you look at who's the head of the Prime Minister's Department, Martin Parkinson, you know, he stood up to polluters introducing the emissions trading scheme or designing the emissions trading scheme. It's not a sexy thing to say, but I think the administration and, you know, the government's had a rotten week. I think the administration of the government is in fairly good hands.
What should we look at? What can we? My whole thesis is that there are things we just don't see. Lots of lobbyists, we have no idea. We didn't know the banks were down there with all the FOFA reforms. You know, there's so much we're not conscious of. What can we look out for, Peter, in your experience?
Things that just don't make sense. That blanket opposition to Labor's reforms, winding them back, that made no sense.
This is financial advice.
There had to be such a thing. You also see it on...
So if you smell a rat, there possibly is a rat there. I don't like conspiracy theories, you see, but sometimes I smell a rat.
Well, you can look at donations. What was it? What do you call it? It's the Australian Salary Packaging Industry Association, Geraldine, gave $250,000 to the coalition, and you're just in the last election campaign, and you remember the coalition was opposing what I would say was a more reasonable approach to taxing the use of employer-provided cars. So where they do something unreasonable, it's likely to...
But how do I find out about that?
You find out about it after the event. We only found out about that recently, right, because of the way these things happen. But their opposition to that was so either unprincipled, you know, they were doing it for political advantage, or there was something in it for them. You can usually suspect when someone's been got at, and yeah, you're right, you find out later.
So what can we expect next week?
I think that for the next, I think it's 3 weeks really, around that, until Parliament finishes until the May budget, it will limp to some sort of close. There'll be modest things announced on tax, and they'll sort of try and shut down a lot of discussion. They're squaring away a lot of people. They're talking about giving more money to the states and so on. to get things ready for an election. Now, after the election, we'll see what happens afterwards, if they get back, which I imagine they will.
Peter Martin, lovely to chat again. Thank you. Peter Martin, who's the economics editor of The Age, and I did notice that the Ernst & Young tax policy leader, Alf Capito, was in the press this week asking for a sort of like a productivity commission set up, a tax reform commission to provide independent advice on the best tax policies in Australia. We'll see if that takes hold. That's at least out in the open. We can see that quite openly, which is good. It's what we can't see that really worry me. So I'd be very keen to hear your thoughts on that tax policy debate, which seems to be the liveliest thing around at the moment in Australia. And so it should be, but it'd be nice to have it as involving as many of us as possible. I'm Geraldine Doogue. I do hope you can join me at the same time next week or online via the RN website.